Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to Q4 FY26 earnings conference call of Belrise Industries Limited. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star, then zero on your touch-tone phone. Before we begin, a brief disclaimer. This conference call may contain certain forward-looking statements about the company, which are based on beliefs, opinions, and expectations of the company as on date of this call. These statements are not the guarantees of future performance and involve risks and uncertainties that are difficult to predict. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Shrikant Barve, Managing Director. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining us today for Belrise Industries Quarter 4 and FY26 earnings conference call. Joining me on call are my sons, Sumit and Swasthi, along with our CFO, Mr. Rahul Ganu, and SGA, our investor relations advisors. Before we discuss the performance, I would like to take a moment to reflect on how far we have come as an organization. When I started Belrise in 1996, and for much of the first decade, we were almost entirely dependent on a single customer. That customer relationship was foundational to our growth, and we are grateful for the trust they placed in us. But alongside that partnership, we worked steadily to diversify. We have expanded our customer base, adding new programs, and growing our content per vehicle across multiple categories. Over the past three decades, that effort has paid off in a meaningful way. Today, our growth is truly broad-based. No single customer and no single vehicle segment determines our performance. This diversification gives us resilience and greater confidence in the consistency of our business model. We have made strategic progress as we complete our first year as a listed company following our IPO in May 2025. I am pleased to say that we have delivered on what we set out to do, and the results reflect the sustained effort and discipline of our team. Our first commitment was to deliver mid-teens revenue growth while keeping our EBITDA margins stable, and I'm glad to share that we achieved this. Both on the top line and at the margin level, we performed in line with our guidance. This gives us confidence on our operating model. Our second commitment was to double our four-wheeler and commercial vehicle business over a period of 2 years. In FY25, we saw strong progress on this front. Our four-wheeler business segment recorded a growth of 71% in Quarter 4 of current year and 31% in the full year 2026, while the commercial vehicle segment grew by 32% in Q4 and by 35% for the FY26. These are very meaningful numbers, and we believe the trajectory is firmly on track. Third, we had spoken about increasing content per vehicle. In our two-wheeler segment, content per vehicle grew by 65%-70% during this year. In our four-wheeler and commercial vehicle segments, supported by the addition of H1, content per vehicle grew by around 40%-45%. These improvements reflect our ability to offer a broader basket of products to our customers across segments. Fourth, we made meaningful progress in expanding our proprietary segments. In suspensions and steering columns, we acquired four marquee customers each. While in high-tensile products and braking systems, we added four and two marquee customers respectively. We believe each of these segments has strong growth potential and will continue to become increasingly relevant to our business going forward. Fifth, we also obtained board approval for merger of two group entities into the listed company at close to book value, which will help simplify the group structure and improve operational efficiencies going forward. Taken together, these five metrics, that is revenue growth, total addressable market expansion, increased content per vehicle, expansion to proprietary segments, and simplification of group structure represent the building blocks of a stronger Wheelrite. We remain focused on sustaining this momentum in the years ahead. From an industry perspective, the sector witnessed strong growth in the fourth quarter this year. The sector benefited significantly from the GST rate cut introduced by the Indian government late last year, which proved demand stimulus. We hope this translates into a structural and sustained uptick for the industry rather than a temporary pull forward of a demand as the overall sector continues to evolve. On two-wheeler specifically, a segment in which Wheelrite holds a leadership position, we remain confident about our long-term growth. It is worth noting that the two-wheeler segment not only recently returned its pre-COVID peak, unlike other vehicle categories that recovered far earlier. This makes us believe that there is still meaningful headroom for growth ahead of two-wheelers. In our view, it represents a long-term structural story for India for its mass consumer base. As income rises, connectivity improves, and the rural demand deepens, we expect this segment to perform strongly over the coming years. Wheelrite is well-positioned to further consolidate its leadership in the two-wheeler metal components and plastic space. I also want to address a topic that comes up frequently over the past few months. Input costs, particularly steel and plastic, have remained volatile over the past year. However, our business operates on a back-to-back pricing model for raw materials. This means that any fluctuation in input costs is effectively passed through to our customers with a certain lag. As a result, raw material movements have a limited impact on our margins or overall profitability. This safeguard ensures that Wheelrite's gross margins remain relatively stable in periods of commodity price uncertainty. Coming to our growing footprint in the aerospace and defense segment, this is a strategic pillar for us, and we have made significant progress in building our capabilities here. During the third quarter of last year, we acquired SDM in France, and in Q4, we followed that up with the acquisition of Chesterol in UK, further deepening our capabilities in this domain. Together with these acquisitions, we have significantly strengthened our capabilities in the aerospace and manufacturing. We are now servicing two of the world's largest aircraft OEMs as well as their engine suppliers. Aircraft engine components are among the most technically demanding products to manufacture. They require exceptional precision, rigorous quality standards, and a depth of engineering capability that very few companies globally can demonstrate. Our entry into this segment is a major technological milestone for Wheelrite. Our long-term vision for aerospace is closely tied to the Indian opportunity. India is expected to be among the largest beneficiaries of the rapid global growth in air travel and aircraft demand over the coming years. And yet, despite being one of the world's largest consumers of aircraft, India's contribution to global aerospace manufacturing remains minimal today. We believe India is one of the most competitive manufacturing destinations globally, supported by its skilled workforce, strong engineering capabilities, and robust work culture. These advantages are expected to drive a shift in global aerospace manufacturing towards India, and we are committed to positioning ourselves at the forefront of this transformation. Coming to the results, we had a strong quarter with our adjusted PAT reaching INR 1,290 million. Total revenue from operations for quarter 4 FY26 stood at INR 25,528 million, up by 12% year on year. Including manufacturing revenue of INR 21,763 million, which grew 21% year on year. Our EBITDA and manufacturing EBITDA stood at INR 2,901 million and INR 2,800 million respectively, with margins at 11% and 13%. Another thing I would like to note is that we had a one-time operation loss of INR 94.7 million in quarter 4 of FY26 in our subsidiary Beldrise Aerospace and Defense due to startup costs related to overhauling of machinery, legal and professional expenses, and personal expenses related to its acquisition, Beldrise SDM, we did in France. We expect this loss to be one time and expect SDM to be EBITDA positive in the year 2027. We are pleased to announce that the board has declared a final dividend of 0.55 INR per share for all existing shareholders. We remain committed to rewarding our shareholders for their continued trust and support as we grow together. To close, I would like to reiterate that Beldrise is in strong position today. We have delivered on our commitments. We have diversified our business meaningfully. We are entering high-value, high-complexity segments that will define the next chapter of our growth. And we are doing all of this while maintaining financial discipline. With this, I hand over the call to Swastit to discuss about the current quarter and way ahead. Thank you.
Thank you all for joining this call. This quarter was significant for us as we deepened our penetration with two of the fastest growing two-wheeler OEMs and strengthened our presence in the aerospace and defense segment through the acquisition of Chester Hall. Coming to our key customer wins, I'm pleased to share a few significant customer wins during quarter 4 of FY26 that reflect the strength of our relationships and the depth of our product capabilities. Number one, we secured a large new order from one of the fastest growing two-wheeler and three-wheeler OEMs in the country for the supply of exhaust systems and fuel tanks for one of their highest selling models. This win is particularly meaningful when viewed in the context of a broader journey with this customer. Over the past 18 months, what began as a program for steering column systems and suspension systems has now grown with the addition of exhaust systems as well as fuel tanks to the product portfolio for this customer. We see this relationship becoming truly meaningful for us going forward. Production for these programs will be supported through a brownfield expansion at our Bangalore facility, with production slated to begin in quarter 2 of FY26-27 and a peak annual revenue of INR 90 crores. We expect this customer relationship to emerge as one of our largest two-wheeler business partnerships over the next couple of years. The second win has an important backdrop. During quarter 4, which was challenging across the industry, one of our largest Japanese two-wheeler OEM customers faced a supply disruption when a small tier 1 supplier serving them came under immense financial stress. At that time, we stepped in. Within 8 weeks, our team developed the required parts at rapid pace and completed a full business transition, ensuring uninterrupted production for the customer during a very critical period. While the immediate revenue contribution from this rescue was modest, the trust and goodwill we built with this marquee OEM are far more significant. Building on that confidence, we received a major new order from the same Japanese OEM for complete exhaust system and a clutch of several other metal components. This program is expected to generate peak annual revenues of approximately INR 220 crores, with production commencing in quarter four of this fiscal year. We believe this order will further cement our partnership and drive meaningful growth with this customer in the years ahead. Third, the ramp-up of our Haridwar facility is progressing well, with trial parts already dispatched to one of our largest two-wheeler OEM customers. We expect the pace to strengthen this quarter, and we expect to reach peak production over this fiscal year. The plant will receive components from multiple existing facilities, including Greater Noida and Pantnagar, enabling backward integration across our network while limiting incremental greenfield capex. Fourth, we secured the chassis business for the new marquee model launches of one of our largest customers at their Pune and Sambhajinagar facilities. While a portion of these revenues from these models will replace existing business, these launches represent a significant growth opportunity for us going forward. Fifth, we also secured orders for multiple components, including chassis, battery trays, and other metal components for an emerging EV player launching its vehicle in partnership with one of the largest Japanese two-wheeler OEMs. Supplies for this model is expected to commence in quarter three of this fiscal year. And lastly, we strengthened our position in the premium two-wheeler segment by securing a single source component order for a 650cc premium motorbike from an Italian OEM intended for export markets. Although the volumes are smaller, the manufacturing process and technology involved are highly complex, with only one other supplier in the country capable of producing such components at comparable standards. Now, I'd also like to address some of the headwinds we navigated during Q4 and share our perspective on how these will play out going forward. During the quarter, we faced certain supply chain challenges arising from an ongoing oil crisis, along with elevated raw material, energy, and logistic costs. In addition, the recent Haryana minimum wage led to increased pressure on labor and overall operating costs across the country. Despite these headwinds, we maintained uninterrupted production and continue to meet our delivery commitments to customers throughout the quarter. While some of these cost pressure may persist in the near term, we do not expect them to have any material impact on a medium to long-term margin profile. Our cost structure, pricing arrangements, and operational efficiencies give us the confidence to absorb and manage these pressures. Looking ahead, we expect to continue delivering mid-teens revenue growth consistent with our track record and momentum in our order book. We expect EBITDA margins to remain broadly stable as compared to our FY26 levels. We expect CapEx to remain in the range of 6 to 6.5% of our manufacturing revenues, reflecting ongoing investments in capacity and capability. We are confident in delivering on these commitments and will continue to provide updates as the year progresses. With this, I hand over the call now to Sumed to discuss about the recent acquisition of Chester Hall and our aerospace ambitions. Thank you.
Thank you, Sastit. In Q4 FY26, we completed the acquisition of Chester Hall Precision Engineering, a UK-based specialist in aerospace, defense, and space manufacturing. This is a significant step forward in our aerospace strategy, and I would like to take a moment to explain why we're excited about this business and what it means for Velrise. Chester Hall is a precision manufacturer of aero engine and aerostructure components, supplying to the world's largest aircraft OEM and one of the largest aerospace engine manufacturers globally. It also serves as a single source supplier of satellite components for a major aircraft OEM's space satellite programs, a testament to the depth of trust its customers place in the business. What truly sets Chester Hall apart is the complexity of what it makes. A significant portion of its work involves build-to-spec aero engine components that require precision tolerances of 1 to 2 microns, parts that are mission-critical and that only a handful of suppliers in the world are capable of producing. For one of the world's highest-selling commercial aircraft platforms, it is a single-source supplier of reverse thruster engine components and nacelle parts, and currently ranks among the engine OEM's top 5 suppliers in terms of quality. A key differentiator is Chester Hall's expertise in machining advanced materials such as titanium and aluminum grade 7, metals that are extremely difficult to process and demand very high specialized manufacturing capabilities. The company maintains an industry-leading component rejection rate of just 0.5 to 1%, well below broader industry averages. On the financial side, Chesterol delivers revenues of over 18.5 million GBP in calendar year 2025, with an EBITDA of approximately 2.1 million GBP and a ROCE, return capital employed, of over 20%. The business also has existing infrastructure in place to support scale-up. We acquired it for 13.2 million GBP, a valuation we believe is extremely compelling relative to the quality of the asset and its long-term earnings potential that we foresee. Strategically, this acquisition complements our earlier acquisition of SDM in France and further strengthens our presence with global aerospace and space OEM ecosystems. Importantly, we're already in advanced discussions with OEM customers on transferring a portion of Chesterol's subcontracted manufacturing to India, which will allow us to leverage India's cost and engineering advantages while maintaining the precision and quality standards that our customers demand. Our medium-term vision is to now build a large-scale integrated aerospace and defense manufacturing facility and park in India, one that houses advanced capabilities, including manufacturing for complex aero engine component manufacturing, making it one of the most sophisticated facilities and one of its kind in the country. Let me now hand over to Mr. Rahul Ganu, our CFO, who will take you through our financial performance of Q4 and FY26. Thank you.
Thank you, Sumedji. And good morning, everyone. Let me take you all through the financial highlights. Coming to quarter 4, FY26 consolidated financial highlights, was the total revenue stood at INR 25528 million, up by 12% year-on-year from INR 22744 million. Manufacturing revenue stood at INR 21763 million, up 21% year-on-year from INR 17991 million. EBITDA stood at INR 2901 million, up by 5% year-on-year from INR 2760 million. EBITDA margins stood at 11.4%. Manufacturing EBITDA stood at INR 2800 million, up 9% year-on-year from INR 2573 million. Manufacturing EBITDA margins stood at 13%. Adjusted PAT stood at INR 1290 million, up 17% year-on-year from INR 1100 million. Adjusted PAT margins stood at 5.1%. Exports contributed 5.1% to our manufacturing revenue in INR in quarter 4 FY26, that is INR 1101 million. Coming to the segmental performance on the manufacturing front, two-wheeler and three-wheeler contributed 83.2%. In this, PVs contributed 6.2%, CVs contributed 8.4%, and others would be 2.2% for quarter FY26. Coming to FY26 consolidated financial highlights, the total revenue stood at INR 95091 million, up by 15% year-on-year from INR 82908 million. Manufacturing revenue stood at INR 77346 million, up 17% year-on-year from INR 65938 million. EBITDA stood at INR 11538 million, up 13% year-on-year from INR 10211 million. EBITDA margins stood at 12.1%. Manufacturing EBITDA stood at INR 10577 million, up 15% year-on-year from INR 9181 million. And manufacturing EBITDA margins stood at 13.7%. Adjusted PAT stood at INR 5020 million, up 41% year-on-year from INR 354 million. Adjusted PAT margins stood at 5.3%. Exports contributed 5.5% of our manufacturing revenue in FY26, that is INR 4235 million. Coming to the segmental performance on the manufacturing front, two-wheeler and three-wheeler contributed 82%. In this, PVs contributed 5.2%, CVs contributed 8.3%, and others would be around 4.5% in FY26. Net debt as of 31st March 2026 stood at INR 5977 million. ROACE stood at 14.7%. With this, we open the floor for questions. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handset while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. A reminder to all participants, you may press star and one to ask questions. A reminder to all participants, you may press star and one to ask questions. The first question is from the line of Nitij Mangal from Jefferies. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my question. So I have a couple of questions, please. Firstly, Swastik, you talked about margin staying broadly stable on a full year basis. Can you talk about two things? One, how do you see that trajectory, let's say, through the quarters? And secondly, anything of different cost of impact in terms of commodities, fuel, and labor? Which of these are easier to pass on? Which ones do you think you'll be able to absorb? So how do you get to a stable full year margins despite all the cost pressures?
Thank you so much for the question, Nitij. So when I think about stable margins, I think there's two particular factors that affected us for our Q4 performance of FY26. The first thing was, as my father mentioned, the one-time loss in our aerospace and defense segment of around 94.7 million INR. We expect, as you mentioned before, this loss to be one-time, and hence we expect Belrise SDM as a subsidiary to be EBITDA positive going forward. So that gives us increased confidence. And in the ongoing oil crisis, we're getting affected by around four unique factors. One is the inherent increase in fuel costs. Two is the increase in transportation costs. Third is our labor costs. And fourth is the related personnel costs. I think when it comes to passing these on to customers, I think we'll be looking to pass on the fuel costs and labor costs over a period of time to our customers. While on the transportation costs, we're still in discussions with a couple of our key OEMs, and that is something that we'll get more clarity on going forward. So while this current situation may still persist, we again, as we mentioned before, expect the situation to be short-term, and as we mentioned, maintain our guidance for the full year. Another cost that particularly affected our performance in quarter four was that we did two acquisitions, SDM and Chester Hall, both of which required legal and professional fees, which were paid out in quarter four. Again, we expect these to be one-time expenses. Of course, if there's any further acquisitions, then we'll again incur these expenses, but this is something that we don't believe will be recurring on a quarter-to-quarter basis.
Thanks, Austin. And secondly, on the new OEM orders that you've gotten in the two-wheeler space, can you talk about how can these scale up? Is there opportunity to supply a lot more to these models? Because it seems you've gotten orders from two of the largest selling vehicles. And let's say over the next 2-3 years, how big can these two OEMs become for you?
Yeah. So I'll go one by one. Firstly, talking about the customer who's the fastest growing two-wheeler and three-wheeler OEM. So this engagement with this customer on a meaningful level started around 18 months ago, as I mentioned earlier. First, we supplied steering columns to them, which for them, or for the full industry, was a monopoly product. There was only one supplier over three decades supplying the steering column to all of the three-wheelers as well as the scooters in the industry. We broke the monopoly with our superior engineering advantage as well as our manufacturing capability, and we were able to give a product to the customer, which had much lower quality rejection and much higher automation. I think this was the first element in which they gained trust on not only our manufacturing capability, but more importantly, our engineering capability. Following this, they also invited us to quote for their suspension program for the three-wheeler. Again, an engineering product that we were offering them, which was as good or better than their existing OEMs. So we were able to give them a product at a decent price, again with sustainable engineering advantage. So both of these products, as you'd imagine, are challenger products for us. These products are not our bread and butter. These are products that we're still scaling in. And for this OEM to trust us in these products was a massive vote of confidence. Once we have proven ourselves, and now that we have proven ourselves in both steering columns and suspensions, the discussion right now is on a much larger basis, where now, as I mentioned, we are starting with exhaust systems and fuel tanks for one of the highest selling models. And over the next 1 to 2 years, to your question, we'll build a complete basket with them, where our content per vehicle will go up sharply. And again, we'll penetrate across multiple different models. Right now, we're talking about a brownfield facility in Bangalore, which I would like to reiterate is one of our sharpest ramp-ups that we've seen over the past 3 years. We expect this ramp-up to happen quickly, and based on that, you know, expect this customer to become very large for us over the next 2 to 3 years. On the second customer, which is a large Japanese two-wheeler OEM customer, again, we've been in discussions with them for a while. I think, again, the trigger for them to give us more business was the crisis that we faced in quarter three and quarter four, while the complete supply chain was reeling with challenges related to labor or to fuel, transportation, we were largely able to control our supply chain and manufacturing well. Seeing our confidence, we were able to overnight, in a span of 8 weeks, take over the parts of one of the smaller tier one suppliers. And this imbibed a lot of confidence in them. They saw the agility in which Belrise moved, and based on that, they've given us an order for the exhaust systems and other metal parts for one of their highest selling or their highest selling model, which we believe will allow us to generate revenues of excess of 2,000 million, around 200 crores annually. Again, this was a customer where our presence was negligible, and this again is a very fast growing customer. So both of these customers put together, their contribution to our current revenues are negligible or minimal. With these two wins, we expect them to become very large for us over the next 2 to 3 years.
Got it, thanks. And third is on aerospace. So let's say when you think of next four, I know these businesses are still small, but when you think of next 4-5 years, how much can aerospace start to contribute to your revenues? And are there opportunities to also start manufacturing in India?
Right. So, aerospace and defense, as we've mentioned previously as well and on today's call, fundamentally, it is an area of focus for us. We want it to be a meaningful contributor to our revenues, growing upwards of 10%. And if I can just double click on how we can, 10% of revenue, of how we plan to get there, and why it makes a lot of sense, I'll four specific points. Number one, it's a market with unprecedented demand. India is one of the largest procurers of aircrafts. The order pipelines are upwards of a decade. So if you would order a new aircraft, for example, today, it takes about 10 to 11 years to get a new delivery. And to the largest customers that are, two of the largest airlines that are ordering aircrafts are based in India. So there's a massive captive demand. Number two, the current manufacturing that is localized in India at the moment is very limited. But there is a massive growth that is coming in this space. As I'm sure you've seen, there are the aircraft OEMs as well as the engine manufacturers have publicly announced their missions and targets of setting up manufacturing in India, localizing a large portion of their business in India. And unfortunately, the current ecosystem doesn't exist. But we're building an ecosystem for them in India. We currently have those relationships with the customers given our acquisitions in Europe. And that is a target for us going forward. Number three, specifically with respect to India, we're not the OEMs and the aircraft engine manufacturers are not looking at India as a low-cost manufacturing base, but as a best-cost manufacturing base. There are those engineering capabilities, which fortunately we've built at scale. And given our acquisitions, we're very fortunate to have those capabilities in place already, and we're currently engaging with them. Beyond that, they're looking in the short term, looking at transferring and shifting or giving us new orders to move from UK or from Europe to India as well. That's in the short to medium term. Lastly, there's a lot of government tailwinds, which is very positive. Overall, with these M&A acquisitions, we're able to very drastically reduce our time to entry to the market, gain capabilities, and most importantly, gain certification qualifications, which would take a very long time to get organically. And we have those customer relationships that we've built with marquee customers in Europe, which is going to allow us to grow that significantly and capitalize on that in India as well.
Thanks, Sumedh, and thanks, Sostad. Wish you the best.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Vipul Agarwal from HSBC. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi team. Thank you for taking my questions. Actually, I have a few questions. Starting from your plan for QIP, you just announced that you'll be doing a QIP of 2,000 crores. So is it for the repayment of debt or some new acquisition? What's the plan, if you can help us understand?
So Vipul, thanks for your question. At this point of time, it's only an enabling resolution. I would also like to clarify that up to 2,000 crores, we will come back to you on the right time if there's any further progress on this.
Okay, makes sense. My second question is on the exhaust system. You talked in details with the previous answer. Just a few things over here. Like, is it a, given that exhaust systems are pretty, the segment is pretty competitive. So how do you see margins there? Do we have a, like, I've seen your plants and you have a pretty good vertical integration over there. So what is the competitive edge? You could turn around the whole project in just 8 weeks. So what was the competitive edge over there? And how do you see, like, maybe if you are getting a pretty big order from a big OEM and that's a 4,400 crores is a pretty big revenue. So how do you see this segment growing for you in terms of margin and maybe getting more business in this segment?
Right. Just like to clarify a couple of things. The product that we turned around in 8 weeks was not the exhaust system itself, but there were few smaller metal components that we were able to turn around. And this 400 crore figure, I don't think I've quoted that. What I did mention was there's a 220 crore order from one of the OEMs and a 90 crore order from another OEM. So put together, that would be around 310 crore of peak revenue. Now, to answer your question more specifically on exhaust system itself, it is one of our largest products and we have a market leadership in this product itself. I think, as you've seen our plants, I think the amount of automation that we're able to deploy in exhaust systems is second to none. So we're able to use our robots very effectively. As a company, as a whole company, we have more than 850 robots. So we are able to have much higher automation as compared to our peers. Second, as you mentioned, we also have much higher verticalization. So we are able to all the process in-house, right from the tooling to stamping to the fabrication to the robotic fabrication, painting, coating and assembly. So most of these processes are done in-house, while a lot of our peers do it outsourced, due to which we're able to build a competitive advantage. And the third and fourth, I think, are more potent reasons. Third, I would say, in terms of engineering capability, I think exhaust systems are known for NVH, which is noise, vibration, and harshness. We have a lot of metallurgical understanding of how to assist OEMs in the design and development of these exhaust systems based on NVH, as we have done this product for a better part of 3 decades today. The kind of learnings and, horizontal deployment practices that we have allow us to learn the best practices from unique OEMs and to understand how we can contribute that across multiple different OEMs. And fourthly and lastly, if I also just point out about one technology that is unique to us and that cannot be emulated or is very rarely emulated by our peers, since the exhaust system is a very glossy part, it's a part that is immediately attractive in a bike, it requires plating. This plating actually has to be done on stainless steel for a lot of the premium models. We are the only or one of the only players in the country to have this capability to surface coat on a stainless steel. And this again allows us to have a competitive advantage over our peers. So all of these factors put together, right from the verticalization to the automation to design and unique process, allow us to have a competitive edge in the exhaust system manufacturing.
Thank you for the detailed answer. My next question is on the CAPEX. You talked about that CAPEX would be around 6 to 7%. But now understanding that you are also now entering to products which are more sophisticated, they would need more R&D. And so if you give some idea about like what can be in your R&D expense going forward, what was in like 2 to 3 years before this acquisition, how is it moving right now and how do you see it planning out maybe next 3 to 4 years? How are you placed over there in R&D terms?
Yeah, so this R&D expense will be inclusive in the 6-6.5% of manufacturing revenue that we spoke about. Of course, CapEx as a percentage of revenue has grown over the past 3 years, and we expect it to grow going forward. If you look at our R&D team, there's more than 163 people that we have in our R&D team, and they're able to drive deployment of engineering across suspensions, steering column, high tensile products, braking, and so on and so forth. So these are the four or five products that we are working on initially. Of course, we have other products that we are in the design and development phase of, and over the next 12 to 18 months, we will launch. So suffice it to say, I think R&D is a core capability for us, which is why our two-wheeler content per vehicle has gone up by 60-65%. If you look at this increase of 60-65%, around 80% of the 60% are all proprietary products, which have all been developed in-house and in partnership with an Italian as well as Japanese tier one. So I think proprietary products will be a core part of our strategy, and we'll continue to execute on that area.
Just one follow-up on this one, that on R&D, like, you have around 550 people right now. And again, I'm just repeating my question, part of my question, like, since you are into steering columns, you are into high tensile steels, then you're also getting into aeronautics. So I would assume that these things need far more aggressive R&D expansion. So if you have some set up some targets, maybe to increase your team by some, like, any thought you have given around it, maybe if you have. And would understand it must be in a nascent stage right now, because the things are still moving in a good momentum, but any thoughts around that?
Directionally, I think we're both on the same page. We will look to hire more, get into more partnerships, acquire other aerospace companies. So all of these directionally are the correct things to look forward to. Exact specifics about how much it would rise, I do not have with me at the moment, or I cannot comment at this moment, but it's definitely the direction in which we're heading towards.
That makes sense. Another question is, I may have to give like a couple of more questions. Just one question is on your trading business. Earlier, Srikanth sir talked about, like, maybe you might localize some products in India, or maybe spin off the whole entity, because again, it's on consolidated basis, it is margin dilutive. So any thoughts on that? Any plans on the trading business about localizing, or what's the future of that part of your business?
Yeah, we have not commented on hiving off this business in any format. As we think more about this business, we'll keep you updated.
Okay, makes sense. Yeah, I guess that was all from my side. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Radha from Motilal Oswal. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. Thank you for the opportunity. So I wanted to understand, in suspensions, do we have any customers in the domestic passenger vehicle OEM space? And where do you see the suspension business in the next 3 years in terms of what percentage of revenue would this be in your target?
Right. Thank you for your question, Radha. So right now, we're not catering to the passenger vehicle space. We're only catering to the two-wheeler and three-wheeler space, where, as we mentioned earlier, we have four marquee customers, three of which have been onboarded over the past 18 months. These are all very large two-wheeler and three-wheeler
OEMs. Okay. Secondly, bookkeeping question. What is the absolute revenue from suspension and polymer division in FY 2026? And if you could highlight the same for H1 revenue and PAT for FY 2026.
We do not have those figures handy at the moment. We're happy to, let you know that offline.
Okay, sir. Thanks for all the best.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Jyoti Singh from Haitong Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you for the opportunity. Sir, two, three questions from my side. One is on the current this acquisition we have done on the H1 Magfilter and Chester Hall. So should we expect more inorganic growth going forward in FY 2027? And if you can tell us, like, which area are the priority, auto component, EV system, aerospace, or international manufacturing? And another, like, you have clearly mentioned on the content per vehicle side that we have grown. So what was the 2 years ago and now, if we can give us average view on that? And what is the medium-term content per vehicle opportunity from premiumization and EV transition? And third, on the several facilities that come in production across Chennai, Pune, Bhiwandi, so could you just share current utilization level across this new plant and expected break-even timeline for each? Thank you.
Sure. So those are a few questions, so I'll try to answer them one by one. I think on your first question about how we'll think about inorganic acquisitions, let me just maybe over a couple of minutes paint the picture of how we want to go ahead doing inorganic acquisitions. There's three verticals which we'll, or there's three dimensions that we focus on when going after inorganic targets. One is customers, second is capabilities, and third is verticalization. So if I was to just relate them to the acquisitions we have done recently, when we did the Chester Hall acquisition, we got access to customers like the world's largest aircraft OEM, as well as one of the premier engine suppliers. For us to have, you know, attained these relationships organically would have easily been a 2 to 3 year journey. And even after that, the revenue that we would have been able to get out of this would have been fairly low. So getting access to customers, which otherwise would take us a long time, would be the first tenet of our inorganic story. Second would be capabilities. Maybe now I can take a brief of the H1 acquisition, where we got access to the high tensile capability over there, where now we are able to go from 600 megapascals, which is the average in the industry, right up to 1200 megapascals organically within India and 1700 megapascals through a partnership with H1 globally. So with this increase in tensile strength, we're able to achieve a lot of lightweighting as well as increase the safety of our key components. So we look to acquire new capabilities that otherwise would take us long to build, and that's how we like to enter new OEMs as well as cross-sell our products. And third would be verticalization, and I think this is also an important tenet. I think if we are able to invest more in backward integration, that would mean for us to increase our gross margin per rupee of product that we're shipping out, and hence increase our return profiles. So we might also look for backward integrated facilities where the ready-made customer would be us, and that would allow us to scale these products fairly quickly and over a short period of time. If you think about the three acquisitions we have done, MAC Filters, H1, four actually, SDM and Chester Hall. Two of them, MAC Filters and SDM, were done at book value, while Chester Hall and H1 were done at a mid-single-digit EV/EBITDA. So all four of them have been EPS and ROC accretive since day one. We really want to focus on doing acquisitions which are mild in terms of the valuation we're paying. We're not a company who would go after expensive acquisitions at all. And even when we think about our aerospace ambitions, we will not go ahead and do expensive acquisitions in the future. Instead, we'll focus on meaningfully scaled companies which are stable and have strong cash flows. And the real benefit we'll look to get out of these aerospace companies would be getting those capabilities and customers and moving those to India, which we believe is a far larger opportunity as compared to paying an expensive multiple in India or abroad. Right. Can you please repeat the remaining questions?
Yeah, sure. Understood. And sir, second question is on the content per vehicle side. So if we compare as per today and versus 2 years ago, what is the, and also what is the medium-term content per vehicle opportunity we are seeing from the premiumization and EV transition?
Right. So content per vehicle, as we mentioned, in two-wheelers around 18 months ago would have been 12,000 optimum, and now it's gone to 20,000 if I include the merger of our two related parties, Barbie Autocomps and Eximius. So that's a, what, 60-65% increase in content per vehicle. I think more than comment on further increase in content per vehicle, which is of course a priority for us, what would be more relevant for us at this point of time would be to cross-sell more. So for this, you know, 7,000-8,000 of new content per vehicle that we have added, if we can get 3 to 4 unique OEMs for each of them, that will allow us to really broad-base our growth going forward. We don't want to introduce a product and only have it selling to one customer. We really want to make sure that it is penetrated across the industry, and that's the only way in which it will become relevant to our revenues going forward. Same way in four-wheelers, we were at close to a 25,000 content per vehicle maybe 18 months ago, which has gone up to 40,000-45,000 with the acquisition of H1. Again, over there, four-wheeler and commercial vehicle, as you mentioned, is a very small category for us. So rather than increase content per vehicle, I think we are just looking to enter as many new models as possible since it's a blue ocean for us. We want to keep on winning new models across new OEMs, and that's why to double our revenue as compared to our FY25 revenues in this fiscal year, we'll have to grow at close to 40%-45%, which is our endeavor, and which is what we are confident about doing. In terms of a near-term guidance of where content per vehicle can be, nothing that we can, you know, comment on at this point of time, but we'll expect content per vehicle to continue to be going up going forward as well.
Okay, sir. And another, could you just share current utilization level across these new plants and what is expected or break-even timeline for each?
We are unable to comment on plant-specific questions on utilization and break-even.
Okay, sure. Sir, just one more question on the aerospace side. So what kind of market size we are seeing in India? And another, earlier waiting period was too high, more than 6 months. So now a lot of companies entering into aerospace. So what kind of waiting period we are looking to reduce further, if you can comment?
So, I'm not sure what waiting period you're talking about, 6 months. So I think there are two times.
If we are ordering a new aircraft.
No, it's significantly higher. It's 8, 9, 10 years to in certain cases, as opposed to 6 months. So that is essentially, if you were to order a new aircraft today, you'd have to get in line. There is significant backlog with both the aircraft manufacturers in the world, and there are significant supply issues. On a demand side, it is very solid, it's phenomenal. On a supply side, there are significant constraints. Again, like I mentioned, India is one of the largest aircraft procurers or acquirers in the world. And compared to that, aerospace market size in terms of aircraft, the manufacturing that happens locally is significantly almost negligible. As a result of that, the aircraft OEMs as well as the engine manufacturers are looking at India to increase localization, predominantly also protect from a China Plus One policy. And in that sense, there is a massive market that exists in India. The second lead time that is even more stark is actually qualification certification. As you can imagine, everything in aerospace is extremely mission-critical, safety-critical. So anything you have to get in the supply chain, the qualification certifications are extremely important. In certain cases, they can take up to 12 months, 18 months, up to 24 months for certain processes. And in that sense, that is where our acquisition strategy comes in. We're able to get access to customers, get into existing supply chains, and most importantly, get access to those qualification certifications with those specific OEMs and decrease time to get into that supply chain and ecosystem.
Okay. Thank you so much, sir, for detailed explanation.
Thank you. Due to time constraints, that was the last question of the day. I now hand the conference over to management for closing comments.
Right. I would like to thank everyone for their time, interest, and questions. I hope we've been able to address most of your queries. We remain confident in our growth strategy, both near-term and long-term. For any further queries, please reach out to us or to Strategic Growth Advisors, SGA, our IR partners. Thank you once again for joining. Thanks.
Thank you. On behalf of the Belrise Industries Limited, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your line.